Welcome to today's episode of Palms Building Connections. And today with us is Esther Finidori, and she is VP Environment at Schneider Electric. Welcome, Esther. Thank you very much for being with us today.
And thank you for having me.
Yes. Could you please explain a little bit about yourself and your role in the Schneider Electric company?
Sure. So at Schneider Electric, I'm in charge of our global environmental strategy. This means setting the directions, taking on behalf of the company all the commitments we take on the environment related to climate, but also resources, biodiversity, and then more importantly, driving the transformation internally. So it's a lot about governance, a lot about what can support performance, and you see where I'm going, digital tools for efficiency. And it's also about how do you track, measure, and lead transformations across the company to make it happen. And this is critical because we want to show from the inside out how you can really deliver the transition, energy and climate transition right now, looking and at our own portfolio of activities.
Yeah, and that's important. I think you do the sustainability ESG topic for the internal operations of Schneider itself. And you must have been quite successful on it because you've been elected most sustainable company, Schneider Electric, for 2 years in a row, right?
What, 1 year? You can only be one year in a row.
But twice.
Exactly.
2 years consecutive anyway.
Yeah, so we are ranked, you know, there are several ratings that help benchmark assess the performance of companies when it comes to ESG. And we do take a pride and we take it seriously to be ranked as part of the most sustainable companies. Hopefully we're not the only ones out there, but the most sustainable companies when it comes to our own transformation.
Yeah, so the whole ESG, and let's explain it for listeners who are probably or perhaps not so familiar. ESG is environmental, social, governance. Also, basically, in our market, I think often referred to as sustainability, I would say. I think it's a topic that has been hitting the agenda of senior management of companies now at a very high rate, very fast over the past years, I would say. So with Schneider, you're already in a position that you're executing on it, I guess. So can you a little bit explain to what kind of factors, elements Schneider is actually putting effort in to improve? What's the playground of this ESG strategy at Schneider?
Sure. So to me, ESG is all about, you know, anticipation. Let me explain. If as a company you're able to anticipate on the trends, environmental trends, social trends, and define robust governance to support those transformation, you're much more likely to be successful in the mid and long term. So ESG is all about anticipation. It's all about embedding your commitments, your vision into your strategy. It's not something you do on the side, not anymore, at least. It's really something that has to be part of your strategy. It's something that we did 15 years ago, even slightly more now at Schneider Electric, which is really completely revisiting our business strategy, considering the mid and long-term ESG trends that will drive the transformation of our societies. And know those transformations, they're massive. All companies, the entire world, all economies have to achieve net zero CO2 emissions by 2050. And it's only by anticipating and building the roadmap to such a transition, for instance, that you can make sure that you transform at the right pace to be successful. So to cut it short, yes, it's extremely high on the agenda of our leaders because it's really felt as being a success, a driver for success for the business overall.
Right. So when we go to our, let's say, our type of audience, and when you look at ESG policies and strategies around buildings and services around buildings, what do you regard to be key initiatives to enhance that profile of how we run buildings, how we use them, how we provide workplaces and that kind of thing? What's key within Schneider for this?
Our buildings is extremely interesting because you need to manage different levels of information and decision making. And you need to articulate the local needs, the levels, the needs and the decisions you have to take at the level of the building with the global needs and the global, let's say, agenda and target setting. So at the global level, it's all about, let's say, portfolio management. How do you assess the reality of your portfolio stock? And how do you plan the roadmap to improve the performance, the energy, CO2, waste, water performance of your buildings over time? And you need for that data, the capability to set targets, and you need the oversight and the planning capability to build a future. And then at the local level, in the site, you need to make sure you have a good comfort levels for your buildings. You need to plan maintenance. You need to plan operations in a very efficient manner. And of course, you need to make sure you anticipate and plan the concrete actions into the buildings that will deliver the global targets. So it's all about this articulation of how do you have good global oversights and target setting and roadmap management coupled with very efficient local planification and management.
Right. So on a local, but also actually on a more regional basis, I always have the impression that looking into the future, when you look at sustainability, ESG topics and carbon emissions, that buildings have a very important role to play in the energy transition itself. So how is Schneider Electric, how are you looking at the role of buildings, and what are you doing in that field of energy transition and the role of buildings in there?
So buildings overall, globally, they represent approximately 30% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So, you know, looking for efficiency in buildings is, of course, paramount to the energy transition. You're perfectly right. So in practice, what do you do? I think everyone should do two things. The first thing is everything new has to be future-proof. So any new building needs to be designed with the future in mind, and it needs to be future ready, if you wish. It will be there in 2050, so it needs to be ready for net zero, right? Net zero CO2 emissions. It means that from the design, you need to embed the right technology and the right supervision and management software so that you will be able to manage the building efficiently today, but also build the transition and the evolution of the building in time. So number one, everything has to be future ready. Everything new has to be future ready. Number two is you need to drive the improvement on the stock. You can't just focus on new build, right? And on the stock, this is where today Schneider has put a lot of efforts historically. We've now had four what we call company programs, four programs of 3 years each, where systematically we've delivered energy efficiency on the portfolio, on the stock of the building that we manage, through a better oversight of our energy consumption, coupled with energy efficiency actions and improved maintenance procedure. And on this improvement of the stock, I believe this is where a lot of companies can still accelerate today.
Right. So in terms of this transition, there's something perhaps very interesting happening in the market today. Due to geopolitical developments over the past months, so to say, the situation in Russia, for instance, we see prices of energy really soar. And on the back side of that, the notion is that previously, green energy like solar would be a almost financially difficult proposition. And now it's the other way around, because basically you don't pay for any resources of the sun in order to create energy. So how is this affecting your own policies within Schneider now that this is happening? And how do you see the market responding to that?
The current context is really interesting, very, very interesting. What we see is, in fact, a huge acceleration of trends that we are all wishing for and that we could foresee, but that all of a sudden are really at the top of the political but also social agenda, because the crisis right now is of course impacting governments but also companies and citizens. And it's really a massive shift or a massive push to the status quo. It's true as well for our own operations. Right now, we're looking at our own factories and our own buildings, office buildings, and building their own resiliency plan. What do you do during the winter if the power is being reduced or cut? Yeah. How do you save energy? Incremental, but also disruptive measures. at the level, I would say, of a state, of a region like Europe, it's a complete overhaul of the entire energy system that is being discussed, where pricing mechanisms could change, as well as countries now see energy and as really a question of sovereignty and a question of being competitive in the market. So from, I would say, the very local, the plan you can make in your own factory to go through the winter to the national and even sub-national level, we see a huge shift in an acceleration in the transition towards less fossil energy, of course, more efficiency and more flexibility. So it's really very, very interesting times.
So in terms of, because you touched on it just now, energy security, that you can secure energy provisioning at all times during the winter. Linked to that, in my head at least, is the question of large volume storage of electrical energy in buildings itself, which has been up till now, I think, a conversation on whether it would be an economical interesting factor. Now, there seems to be this additional argument of, when you store your own energy, you can basically back up the whole breaking down system in your own building. So are you looking at that at all?
Yeah, you're perfectly right. And again, it's the same. Local and global have to fit together. At the level of the building, the ability to power your building and to sustain this power, if there are power cuts, is of course a competitive advantage this winter, but it will stay a competitive advantage in the future. So I would say all of the sudden, because it's true that it was, you know, people talked about it before, but now there is the realization that the capacity to secure supply at the level of your building, of your factory, of your office, of your data center is definitely a critical aspect to look into in the future. And then at the level of a grid, state or a country, we're talking about how buildings can now adapt to the power supply capacity. In the past, supply had to adapt to consumption, and now we're talking about how buildings will help regulate the equilibrium on the grid by producing energy, producing renewable electricity, as well as storage, notably for the integration of the electric vehicles. Electric vehicles to building mean the capability in buildings to develop local production plus storage, so that the buildings themselves become actor to regulate the grid. So at both levels, we see a huge change in how we perceive the importance of buildings in the electrical landscape.
And to that point, again, I think that's one of the things that Schneider is basically very active in, is the emergence of what they call microgrids in terms of technology. I get the impression that this whole new dynamic, as you basically sketch it around how buildings are going to operate in the future in smart grid environments, basically induces the need to install this type of microgrid technology. And please explain a little bit about what it is to the audience. But it's becoming like a new asset class for buildings, almost, is it?
Oh, yeah, of course. So a microgrid can be at the level of a neighborhood or an industrial park. It can also be at the level of a building itself. And then in a household, we call it prosumer, but it's the same. You can have the same concept all the way to a single house that may be the one you occupy. So the idea is that each person, each building will be able to produce its own energy, will be able to assess production and consumption in a real-time manner. And depending on the grid, depending on the prices, depending on energy availability, adjust production, consumption, and even sell to the grid in a very dynamic manner. And make it even a revenue generation tool, so that the building itself is more resilient and the building can also contribute to producing and selling electricity. So it's really all about local generation coupled with storage that can be batteries, that can also be electric vehicles, and supervision capabilities on the top that help you balance how you produce, how much you consume, when, so that you can make the most of the energy that your building is consuming and generating.
Yeah, it sounds almost like, this is 20 years away. So into your insights, how much is this today in reach for, let's say, facility managers, real estate portfolio managers to consider these types of investments today?
Well, you know, that's back to my point just previously. I think it sounded decades away just a year ago. Now with the current state of energy supply, there is this realization that, you know, energy is a critical resource. It's just, you know, a question of physical flow. Without energy, you can't power your activities. And even if power is a small share of your bill, with no power, you have no activity. You can't open your building if the lights are turned off, right? So right. Energy is now perceived, rightly so, but it took this crisis, I think, to come to that realization as a must resource to operate. If energy right. is a must resource to operate, this completely changes the business case for such investments. Because, you know, the technology is ready. We're not waiting for any breakthrough innovation. The technology is ready. And the business case is now about resiliency and continuity of operations. So my guess is that can really accelerate very, very fast.
It's almost like, you know, as a comparison, it's almost like an element like how COVID accelerated hybrid working, that this energy, let's say energy crisis, call it, I don't know how to call it actually, but this situation is having the same kind of effect on how we deal with power and energy and how we basically build our business cases around it, is it?
That's perfectly true. And you know, everything I'm saying probably sounds a bit technical, but just look at the news. Energy has become a topic that is discussed every day. It's too much in the news, right? So energy is now part of the social landscape. It's part of the discussions. It's part of the citizens' concern to secure energy in its country. So energy is becoming a core to the, you know, public decision making, to citizens' concern. And yes, definitely, it's exactly like with COVID. The crisis is generating a change of mindset, a change of status quo, where we're all invited to reconsider how we've been handling energy over the past years.
Yeah, and to your point, because we've now been talking a lot about the economical side of energy, but there's still this environmental side of energy, where how do you basically create power and what's the footprint of it, which needs to basically go down very fast as well. And I think what I seem to notice is that governments around the world, the EU is with the Green Deal, of course, one of the prime actors almost in the world today, is putting out new legislation in terms of how buildings, also the energy performance directive on buildings is basically in preparation today. How do you look at that? What's the role and what's going to be the influence of governments in the whole energy transition schema and the whole ESG play?
Well, it's key, you know. First, there's a lot of inertia in the rotation of the stock, right? Buildings are not destroyed and reconstructed every decade. So there is a lot of inertia in the stock. And again, back to what I was saying, everything new build has to be future-proof. We now know that future-proof means resilient, means probably some sort of autonomy enabled by microgrid technologies. And it also means that buildings need to be an active player in the grid. They're not just consumers of energy. They have to be actors for the production and stability as well, the supply and the stability of the grid as well. So with that in mind, of course, public policy has a major role to play to nudge or to force this evolution and also to force the new standardization, because all of that will happen in a way that has to be concerted between countries that are interconnected. It's the case for all European countries, but it's not, of course, the only case where countries are interconnected. And you need to plan this transition in a way which is collaborative across borders so that it happens in orderly fashion.
Right, right. So there is this other side to buildings, and that is what they also call buildings as a bank of materials. I've always wondered about it, because you're going to construct a building and you're going to plan ahead for, okay, how am I going to retrieve materials after I've had the life cycle of that building, which is probably 30, 40, 50 years ahead, right? So how's Schneider Electric looking at this element of buildings as a bank of materials?
It's when you look at transition scenarios, it's a huge opportunity in order to build what we call what is being called a circular economy, which means that at the end of life of assets, consumer goods, of course, but buildings as well, you are able to retrieve and valorize all the materials that have been installed in the building. So it's a huge potential. And if I can say it the other way, it's a must of the transition. We can't make the transition without this capability. Why? Because there is a huge CO2 cost to manufacturing those materials from you. Cement, steel, glass, all the materials that are needed to build infrastructure are very, very emissive in terms of CO2. So it's a must. And then the question is, how do you break the silos along the value chain so that during the initial construction and even during the lifetime of the building, the capability to manage properly and get value out of the end of life is properly taken into account. It starts by small things. For instance, now at Schneider Electric, for years, in fact, we're providing to all our customers what we call product environment profiles. It's environmental information on the products that are being embedded into their products and done consistently by all the manufacturers that provide technologies that are being built into the building. You have the capability to get the information and then progressively build that traceability so that in due time, the right information is available to the right player to be able to dismantle and retrieve and handle properly everything that has to be managed at that time. So it's a question of data, providing the right data, building the traceability through sometimes public databases so that the information will be available decades from now when it's needed.
Yeah, it's quite a future look. It's anticipation mainly, is it? This is an anticipation element of anticipation for new builds. When you look at the existing portfolio, you actually mank a lot of that data that you would have when you would build a new building today, of course, using BIM and other stuff. How are you looking at the existing building portfolio in this view?
I would say first a comment on what you said. Yes, it's a building for the future. If you feel really deconstruction, but if you think also about retrofits, in fact, yeah, it's not so far in the future, right? Because a lot of office buildings would go through an important retrofit every 10 years or so. So, it's far along, but not so far, depending on what you're considering. Right. Then coming to the existing stock, well, this is also something we have to invent together, right? Because we can't wait 40 years to become circular. So there are initiatives to learn how to deconstruct, learn how to sort, learn how to valorize, and at the end of the day, learn how to recycle better so that products can be given a second life. I can give you a very concrete example. At Schneider Electric, we're developing a circular range. We call it Circular Certifieds, which are products which are from the take back, products that are taken back from our own customers. That can be, technical take backs, if there are some technical issues with the products, for instance, that go back through our processing lines in our factories, are being tested, repaired where needed, and that we can then commercialize, sell as new with the same guarantee to new customers. So increasingly, manufacturers are developing this capability to take back and recreate value. Right. Without recycling, so it's really closing the smallest loop possible in the economy, recreating value so that those products can be reused by other customers.
Right. In terms of that, and when I would bring that to the workplace and workplace refits, because that's massively being done today under the hybrid working changes at the workplace, Perhaps I'm wrong, but I have the impression that workplace refits always bring a lot of, let's say, landfill. They are basically putting it, just disposing of old stuff and putting new stuff in. So when you look at that perspective at workplace refits from Schneider Electric, what kind of initiatives do you take there?
So first, yes, you're right. Typically, refits are huge generators of waste. And this is definitely a topic that companies need to address. At Schneider Electric, we have two ways of trying to optimize this. The first way is we have a platform. It's called GoSee. We have our own internal platform where sites can, let's say, share, post, and ask for furniture and type of materials, and they're being shared between sites. So let's say a site going through a refurbish has extra tables. Those tables will be put at the disposal of another site who needs the material. Of course, you need transport distances to be within reason for this to work. But we have created a long time ago, in fact, that platform that helps the sites just to, you know, make the information available, because it all starts with the information. Second thing we do, and of course is very efficient, is to work with local bodies. It can be a public associative organization that at the local level structure this sharing and reuse of materials. And you know, things are changing really fast. I'm based in France, and in France now, by law, since beginning of the year, for public purchasers, so public agencies, they have to, it's mandatory, embed 20 to 40% of circular sourcing into their furniture sourcing, for instance. So by law, the market is being accelerated, because of course a major buyer, all public entities, agencies, have to source at least 20 to 40%, depending on the type of furniture, of circular objects. So things are changing very fast. And of course, the capability of, I would say, major players, it can be big companies like Schneider is doing, or public agencies, to accelerate that market by creating a strong demand signal will be key to go much faster.
Great. So last question to you, Esther, because it has been a very interesting conversation, I think. So I can imagine when you're a real estate manager, facility manager, and you're looking at the ESG topic and to improve there, do you have any advice to such people in how to basically start approaching the topic?
Yeah, I think you need the two things at the same time. First, you need to be very pragmatic. Look at your sites, find the wastage. And this is typically a very bottom-up approach. The occupants of the building often can help, and you really need to focus on optimizing the run. This is number one. And then number two is the opposite. You need the roadmap. You need to plan ahead. The transformations to your building will cost money, so you need to build that roadmap so that you can make your building future ready or on the path to net zero CO2 emissions, to full waste recycling, etc. So that simply said, it has value in 2050, because a building that does not undergo the transition will be undervalued and won't be probably won't have happy occupants, neither leaser or owner in the future. So you need to build that roadmap so that you can phase in time the transformations that you need to put your building through.
Well, Esther, that was great advice. I really like this bottom-up and strategic approach at the same time. It's very tangible and very understandable. So thank you very much for sharing your insights with us today. It was a real pleasure. To those who have been listening in, thank you for being with us. And we hope to see you next time again. Thank you. Thank you, Esther.
Thank you.